It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.
And I'm David Hyde. 36 years ago this month, the Seattle School Board voted in a mandatory housing plan. The goal was to desegregate the public schools. Seattle was the first major city to adopt a busing plan without a court order. Mandatory busing lasted in Seattle more than 20 years until the Seattle School Board voted to end the program in 1999. Earlier in the week, we heard some of your stories and memories of busing in Seattle. So today we wanted to put those stories in a larger historical context. Kenneth C. Davis is the author of Don't Know Much About History. And when I spoke with him earlier about busing, he explained why the idea emerged in the first place.
Well, of course, it goes back to 1954. I'm familiar with this because I was born that year, so I've grown up with, as a child of Brown versus Board of Education, in a sense. That was the year, 1954, that the Brown decision was handed down by the Supreme Court, ruling that public schools could not be inherently separate but equal, that that idea in itself was unconstitutional. Brown did not immediately mandate busing itself. There were a series of decisions over the years that happened. In fact, Brown, one of the things that Brown did was say this should be done with all due deliberate speed. And of course, that meant to the states that they could drag their feet as long as possible. We tend to think of this as a problem that was so egregious in the South, and it was. But of course, busing, as we know, in places like Seattle and Detroit, and perhaps most infamously, Boston, became a national solution to the problem of segregated public schools. And like most simple solutions to complicated problems, it brought its own set of problems.
And I want to get into those problems in a minute, but first of all, just a simple question for listeners who aren't familiar with the period. Perhaps they weren't born yet. Why were the public schools so racially segregated at the time?
Because America has a long and dark history of keeping the races separate. We didn't call it apartheid. Of course, we've, you know, just having seen Nelson Mandela's funeral and the apartheid system, de facto apartheid existed in America, especially in the former states of the Confederacy, the southern states. That's why the suits that were heard in Brown versus Board of Education mostly came from states in the former Confederacy. Where schools were strictly segregated, and of course the schools for the black children tended to be run down, in disrepair, and schools for white children were obviously treated much better. That problem existed largely in the South, but not exclusively, because we are a nation of neighborhoods, too. So when you went to a city like New York or Boston or any of the other major cities in the North, you had neighborhoods that were divided black and white, not so much specifically by segregation in the sense of that it had existed in the South, but by social segregation.
36 years ago this month, the Seattle School Board voted in a mandatory busing plan. Kenneth Davis is a historian and the author of Don't Know Much About History, and we're talking to him about the history of busing to desegregate schools. Before busing started here in Seattle in a mandatory way in the late 70s, back in 74, it started in Boston. What happened in that case?
Well, in Boston, the case was quite notable because of the headlines it generated when black children, black school children started to be bused into white neighborhoods. The reaction was angry and ugly and was on the front pages. Most famously, I remember an image of a white man wielding a flag, an American flag, to fend off a black man who was trying to get his children into school. So it was angry on a very, very visceral level. And of course, all of the problems that we have seen since Brown versus Board of Education and in places like Boston, so-called white flight, people leaving the inner cities, urban areas for the suburbs, were not simply a result of busing. So we can't say that, you know, busing was the problem, that was the idea that killed off the urban schools. Part of a much bigger change in American society, but certainly it was one key component of mostly white people leaving inner cities for the suburbs in part because they did not want their children bussed out of their neighborhoods, which had been an American tradition for a very, very long time.
I want to ask about that. I mean, people often associate the South with kind of overt racism in this period. You mentioned that there might have been some other reasons why people were critical of busing. But what role did racism play in a northern city like Boston?
Well, it plays a role in the sense that certainly neighborhoods had always been ethnically and racially divided just by the fact that people tend to congregate with the people like themselves. We are tribal in many respects as human beings. And certainly in some cases it was by either illegal methods of directing some people to live only in specific areas. Redlining is what the banks used to call it in terms of not giving mortgages to African Americans or non-whites to buy houses in predominantly white communities. Those sorts of things existed not just in the Deep South, but across the country. And that is part of the deep-seated racism that is part of American history, and that we wish it away or think we could wish it away, but it is part of the tradition of this country that we've been struggling with in so many ways. It's not because of a deep-seated racism in when we come to schools, I don't think. I think most parents really think I want what's best for my child, not I don't want my white child sitting next to a black child in the school cafeteria. So it isn't that overt. It's really more a sense of I want what's best. And what we saw in a long history of the public schools, and it's not simply about busing, was a decline in funding and public school quality, especially in the inner cities.
Kenneth Davis is a historian and author. His books include Don't Know Much About History. And 36 years ago this month, the Seattle School Board voted in a mandatory busing plan here. Ken, Seattle was the first major city actually to bus kids without a court order. What can you tell us about why Seattle decided to go with busing?
Like so many cases of desegregation, the result of court cases, suits being brought by those who felt that the schools their children were being sent to were of a lesser quality than the schools that predominantly white children were attending. So, and you also had a very progressive-minded school superintendent at the time who thought that all the studies seemed to suggest at that point that white children and black children, or we can say also non-white children, because this applied to children of Asian and Latino background as well, did better when they went to school together. There's been a lot of evidence to suggest that over a long, long time. So it wasn't that this was simply to do something for the black population, but that it was agreed upon that this was basically a better idea for all children.
After the Seattle School Board votes this in, shortly thereafter, there is a ballot initiative, and the majority of Seattleites vote against busing. That's ultimately overturned in the courts, but how common was that sort of thing at the time?
Well, that's not only common at the time, but has continued. I think we know a lot of some of the great failures in the desegregation, but there were also some extraordinary successes, particularly Charlotte in North Carolina, Charlotte-Mecklenburg, also came very late to its desegregation, not until the 70s, but it was ordered by the court and was for a very, very long time considered very, very successful. The schools were desegregated. The scores did not suffer. Schools did well. Kids grew up and got along pretty well. It wasn't until the 1990s that a parent, a white parent, who came from California and was kind of shocked and surprised to learn that this was still going on, brought suit against the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school district, which had 30 years of a very, very good history. And essentially what that court order eventually did was resegregate the schools in Charlotte-Mecklenburg in North Carolina. So there's been a mixed history of some very, very strong successes that busing and desegregation brought about. But now we can also say with increasing certainty that certainly in the inner cities, places like New York City are probably as segregated, if not more segregated, than they were in the 1950s and 60s when Brown versus Board of Education was first announced.
What were some of the unforeseen problems that busing created in cities like Seattle? There was obviously good intentions behind it, but what were some of the unforeseen consequences?
A lot of people just objected to the basic fundamental idea that, and it is a considered an American idea, that we, you know, put our child out to school in the morning and they go to a school in the neighborhood or perhaps on a short bus ride. Obviously, in very rural and suburban areas, it's different. But so you had kids who all of a sudden were, instead of going to a school that was nearby, were getting on a bus ride to go 40 minutes or more at a distance, and some people said that their children's schooling suffered because of that. They were tired, they were exhausted. There would be many who argued that the experience of riding the bus was part of the best thing they did when they were kids, and that's a very different perspective, and that being allowed and being permitted to go to school with people who were different from the kids who were in their neighborhood was actually a very good experience. But that's sometimes a difficult sell to parents, and that's what it came down to in most of these cases. Parents who really objected to, not again, it wasn't so much a racial motivation. I don't want my white kid with a black kid. It was the idea, I don't want my child to have to go so far away to go to school. There are more than a few examples of places where it really did work. But in the end, it comes down to that a very, very essential parental feeling that I want my kids to go to the school that's down the street. And that was the overwhelming feeling that motivated a great many parents that had less to do with racial attitudes.
And that's where we are in many cities today. How integrated are the public schools at this point around the country?
Well, people like Jonathan Kozol, who wrote about this, of course, in a book a few years ago about apartheid, essentially, in the public school system, have said that in many cities, it's worse now than it was in 1968 when Martin Luther King was alive.
What do you see, Kenneth Davis, as the legacy of busing in the United States?
It's a very mixed bag when you look at different cities around the country. Clearly, it failed in places like Detroit and Seattle. I believe most people would say it was a noble but failed experiment. In other cities, it's been a great success, but we have returned to a sense of segregated public schools, mostly in large cities, and that's still a problem that the nation has to grapple with.
Kenneth Davis, thanks for taking the time. I'm David Hyde with Marcy Silman. This is The Record on KUOW.